wonderful way to start our podcast this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the
Comments Theory.
Another exciting installment of the
Comments Theory.
I am your co-host, Chris Thomas.
I'm your co-host, Harrison Williams.
I am...
at a loss for words.
Chris Fabian.
You just used your only for the evening, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not repeating one word of this evening, and I've already lost.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm your moderator, Andrew Wallow. Joining us in the studio today is lovely studio girl, Avery Rich, and our good friend, Mr. Nicholas Fabian.
Hello.
Hello. And today we are talking about... Shit, what are we talking about?
We are talking about... We have a very, very, very special episode planned for you guys this evening, and it was lovingly put together by our wonderful co-host, Chris Fabian, so I will... Pass it on down the line.
Tonight on the show, we are going to be discussing a particular Cracked.com article. Five reasons the superhero movies are a bubble that will soon burst. And
none of us had the forethought to print out and bring with us.
Right. Well,
so shocker. We may need to rely on somebody else.
Right. Well, yeah. At any rate, this is a very special episode because the author of this article... Mr. J.F. Sargent.
Hey, let's rely on him.
Ubiquitous and prolific internet writer for sites such as Crack.com and Film School Rejects, one of my personal favorites. He will be joining us on the show a little bit later via telephone.
Woo! This is our first, I believe, our first phone-in.
Our very first phone-in, yes.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten a lot of hate mail and death threats via the telephone, yeah. But...
Yeah. That's another thing.
We just let him
Mr.
go to
Thomas
vibrate.
Keeps giving out my personal phone number. Thank
it
you
is
very
555.
Yep. Four.
Yeah. So.
I think in usual Coneheads Theory fashion, we'll kick things off this week with the weekend estimates. Yes. This week we will
why
be
the
reading.
Estimates?
Well, the estimates because. Box Office Mojo will be updating all of that tomorrow because they are gathering data for the four-day weekend, as today is Memorial Day.
Thank you, which is what I wanted you to bring up. Happy Memorial Day, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you all had a great cookout and or whatever you do.
Ass mode.
And let's get things rolling. In first place, the by far biggest debut of the week, Fast and Furious 6.
Woo. The franchise that won't die?
The franchise now, that actually has found new life. Yeah.
Where do we stand here at the theory on the Fast and Furious?
I am all for them.
Yeah. We've dipped, yeah.
Yes.
I have to give them props for the fact that they have revived a clinically dead movie series, like movie franchise. And like
now, are we saying that it died because the last, not this newest one, but the last one that came out? Like,
Fast and Furious 3.
No. This is the sixth one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number three is the one where this thing totally shat.
They wrote it off completely.
All right. So if I'm not mistaken, there was Fast and Furious, Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yep. And then Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Then they did
Fast and Furious.
Then Six Fast. Six
then they
furious.
Did Fast Five.
Fast Five.
And now it's
Fast and Furious 6.
The 6 Fast the
which I have to give them serious props for not having a consistent naming convention other than using the word fast.
Yeah.
Are they going to tie this in with Ghost Rider?
Actually no. Fast and Furious 7 is going to be animated and it's going to be a crossover with Cars 3.
Nice.
Shit.
But it's going to be the prequel of how cars came to be.
Right.
Because you know what?
If the final
one
showdown.
Thing that will make up for
Mad Max,
everybody's acting in those movies, it's Owen Wilson.
As Lightning McQueen.
As Lightning McQueen.
Hey,
where do we stand on Vin Diesel?
Still around.
Love him.
Okay.
I'm totally
fine. Do you like Vin Diesel?
I mean, I don't have like a special affinity for him, but I wouldn't call myself a detractor by any means.
Right.
I think he's found a niche that he works with. I mean, I think
sure.
He knows what he is capable of.
Sure.
And he excels at that specific type of role.
I think he could do more.
I agree. I don't think that he sees a need to do more. I mean,
right.
I'm sure he's making a name for himself with the kind of tough guy.
Yeah, he's like an American. Yeah.
Jason Statham.
Yes.
And, like, he's...
Well played on both of you,
and
by
he's,
the way.
Like, I think he almost, like, had his chance with... I'll say this and wrap it up so we can move on with the estimates. But, like, I feel like with the debacle that was Babylon A.D., I think when they were initially shooting that, I think Matthew Kasavich wanted to shoot, like, a serious kind of dystopian Blade Runner type of thing and got fucked by the industry. But... What else is new with Hollywood?
Just one last thing about Vin Diesel. I appreciate his femininity.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
In case he's listening.
The pacifier.
No, if he's listening, I'm going to go ahead and...
Wait, that was him?
I'm going to put it out there again. Vin, me and you. Come to Charleston, man. Live fist fight right there on the back.
Oh, I thought. Oh, I was
Tom Cruise and Vin Diesel. You have been called.
No, I'm not asking him. No, the hot man love doesn't come till later. Is he a Scientologist? Because that could
I Vin Diesel.
I don't. Think
I think
so.
He's Jewish.
I might. Is he really?
Really?
I don't know.
Is Diesel
yeah.
a Jewish name?
Yeah.
Diesel.
Well, he was born Diesel.
Dieselwitzbergstein is actually the full
We're gonna
original
get a
European.
So, all right, moving on with the weekend estimates.
Well, it did premiere in first place with a massive, and I say massive because this 3-day total is larger than the 4-day opening weekend of Fast Five, $96.7 million, ladies and gentlemen.
Holy fuck.
This franchise is going nowhere fast.
Oh, hey.
It will be visiting us. There's already a release date for next year for Fast and Furious 7. So
why not?
I remember back when
they gonna just have that.
I actually want to say that they kind of did a thing where they filmed both of them like very quickly or in tandem.
What makes these movies so successful? I remember back when the first Fast and Furious movie premiered. It premiered alongside a Sylvester Stallone movie called Driven, and. Where he played an IndyCar racer, and it was, and Driven was made almost entirely
was
with
it
CGI.
IndyCar racer? Is that like hipster?
It was like Formula One or whatever.
He was doing that before you heard of it.
No. But that movie, that Sly Stallone movie, was made almost entirely with CGI, and car fans did not like that at all. One of the things that made Fast and Furious so successful was that it was
a lot more practical.
All right.
In second place, a rather disappointing debut for The Hangover Part 3, which I will say was better than the second one, but maybe worth a matinee.
I'm going to stand on the other end of that. I'm going to stand on the devil's advocate. I liked it okay. I felt like it was kind of phoned in. I liked the second one better. The second one, for what it lacked in like the originality of like the
everything,
the plot structure. I mean
right.
Basically, and it was obvious that they were striking while the iron was hot on like a series that they had come up with that was like super successful, and all the actors were poised for superstardom. So like for what it lacked in originality, I did think the gags were funny. The new one. The character, something that I don't know if it's just me or what, but I felt like the characters were like different in a way. Like it was weird. Like
it didn't feel like the same. They buddies that you left in the second one.
I feel like they sort of had like a different.
I think that one of the things was like with Alan, he was played much darker. Like, because he was like, it wasn't like, oh, he's kind of crazy. He's like, no, this guy is mentally ill.
Yeah.
He needs help.
It's not bad or good or whatever, but I mean, like, it really sort of became about him, like, primarily. It was sort of this, which, whatever, it's cool, but, I mean, just throwing out, like, just a difference of opinion on that one, because I felt like, I don't know, like, I felt like they were really going to do it up, and when I saw that they got, like, John Goodman, I was like, oh, this is fucking good. And, like, even, even there was parts with Goodman that I just felt like were missed opportunities or just, yeah.
Well, it's not a must-see, but check it out, I guess. $41.7 million compared to almost double what the second one made in its opening weekend, so... The second one made almost double that.
Right, right.
In third place, slipping two slots, was last week's leader, boldly going down to third place, Star Trek Into Darkness with $37.28 million.
Nice.
Based on what I've gathered, it's tracking actually right about the same as the first Star Trek was. So, at the very least, we're holding even.
What was the domestic gross on that? Just curious.
The domestic gross on
Star Trek.
The first one?
No, this.
Oh, so far it has grossed $146.1 million. So, you know, decent.
Yeah. Which is that movie? I'll just say this really quick, dude. That movie is going by like way quieter than I feel like is warranted. Like that's like quality, amazing fucking sci-fi film that I feel like is like not getting its like.
Tonight's guest does not agree with us because I think we're all pretty unanimous in saying, at the very least, it's a fucking cool movie.
Sure.
I would go further than that. I think you, Mr. Thomas, would as well. But he thought it sucked, so we'll see what he has to say when he calls in.
Yeah, I think it's a modern science fiction masterpiece, and I would say, goes in my top 10 favorite science fiction films.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think it's my favorite Star Trek film
Quick, just for you, the listener, will we be revealing spoilers tonight?
We'll try to avoid Into Darkness spoilers, but if
Be ready. We might just, you know, especially if it's a matter of, you know, a guest attention, and he disagrees. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen at your own caution.
Right.
Yeah.
In fourth place with another debut with a solid $33.5 million, Epic, the first animated film since early March's smash hit The Croods. This one coming to us from Blue Sky Animation, the same folks that brought us Rio and the Ice Age Saga.
I've not seen either.
So, in fifth place, the titan of the box office with $19.2 million, Iron Man 3, which just recently became the fifth highest grossing movie of all time.
Really? What is the first?
Avatar.
Yeah.
Avatar, Titanic, Avengers, and I want to say Return of the King is right under Avengers, but I'm not.
I
have
to say that I like
sure
that Jim Cameron holds two of the top five.
You keep that to yourself, you dirty, dirty whore.
the top two, right?
Yeah.
I am a Jim Cameron shill. I mean, that's.
All right. Well,
I like James Cameron.
You have James Cameron. I have Michael Bay and a conscience because.
And Chris Thomas and I have Nickelback, so we've
all and Jankum.
Jankum. Jankum.
Bring the J, I've got women. The N.
Right. In sixth place, falling three spots, is The Great Gatsby with $13.6 million. Rising one spot to seventh is Mud.
Hold on, really quick, Fabes. One through five, Great Gatsby.
I really need to see it again, but I'm going to sit with like a 3.5.
Okay.
Not
your favorite Baz Luhrmann?
Not my favorite Baz Luhrmann, but there were some things that I didn't. There were definitely some very interesting stylistic choices made. The pacing in particular, which I thought fit the story, didn't exactly make the most enjoyable blockbuster-esque watch, but I thought it was cool what he did with it.
It's a pretty dry read. I mean, the book. So I really don't see how there's much he can do with that. But anyway, I've never been a big Fitzgerald fan.
Yeah. And you said Mud was coming.
Mud, number seventh.
Is it number seventh?
Number seventh, yeah. $1.9 million up from eighth place last week.
Now, is that a major release at this point? Is that
it is nationwide, and it's grossed so far $14.5 million. So, pretty decent for a little.
You got a budget on that?
No, there is no budget listed.
Gotcha.
They did it for free. In eighth place, 42, the baseball drama, with $1.27 million.
Hanging in there.
In ninth place, also hanging in there. With $1.22 million is The Croods. And falling three spots to number 10 Oblivion with $840,000.
I'm amazed that's still in the top 10.
Yeah. Well,
Tom Cruise, star power.
I think even more surprising, not so much that Pain and Gain is in 11th place this week, but that Oz the Great and Powerful is number 12.
God damn.
Yes.
Kids market.
Yeah. Old Sam Raimi.
I remember last time,
it in.
Last year around this time, there was some movie that just kept hanging around that would not go away.
Probably The Lorax.
Oh, no. Hold on, dude. Oh, shit.
It might have been The Lorax.
I feel like, yeah, there was one that was like fucking hanging in there. Oh, damn. I can't remember.
Yeah, maybe it was a Tyler Perry movie. I don't even know. I can't speculate.
Let me see if I can find that for you guys. This week, or this very same frame last year, Men in Black 3 led, followed by The Avengers, Battleship, The Dictator, Chernobyl Diaries, Dark Shadows, What Do You Expect When You're Expecting, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, The Hunger Games? Is that perhaps what you were thinking of?
No, you know what? Maybe
it was fuck. When you said Tyler,
it must have been earlier this last year.
Oh shit, dude! When you said Tyler Perry, it fucking set something off.
Oh, wow.
It's like, damn, that is hanging in there.
Was it Think Like a Man?
Yes. No. Yes.
Think Like a Man was pretty
good. One of those two things that I just said.
That was a pretty funny movie, Think Like a Man.
It might have been a Tyler Perry.
Think Like a Dead Corpse.
It was not a Tyler Perry movie, but it had Kevin Hart and other actors.
It was a Tyler Perry-esque movie, which is the least racist way of saying it was a black person's movie.
Yeah, it wasn't a Turtle from... did you ever watch Entourage?
Yeah.
No.
I think Turtle was one of the main dudes.
I think I remember hearing about that.
I haven't really seen any of those dudes really do shit.
Entourage?
Yeah.
The guy that played E was in... he's not that into you. And I think that's about the most that I've seen him do.
That's a decent movie. Surprisingly for an ensemble pick.
What is it? He's not that into you?
He's just not that into you.
He's just not that into you. Yeah, it was actually for a date. Well, date-ish movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you take a girl to Evil Dead for the first time, first date?
I would never go to a movie for the first date.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if it's a first date, you want to meet them.
Well, I guess so.
I've gone. Yeah, I did the first date, only date sort of thing with a friend of mine, and
done that twice.
We did the movie first. We did the King's Speech, and then I hopped it.
Yeah, going to movies is really when you've been out for a while and, you know, you're really tired of listening to somebody talk and you don't want to have to speak to them anymore.
But as a first movie date? Yeah, totally. Okay. Evil Dead, man.
October, baby. Remember that? Remember that? What was it? The abortion survivor?
Yeah. What?
Remember that shit?
Oh, that's right. October, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, that
you
was...
were in Florida.
That's the one. Yeah, it was the one with Stella. It was Stella, Stella Williams.
You were in Florida, I think, when this came out.
Oh yeah.
It was basically the whole premise was a girl that had survived an attempted abortion.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And she finds out about it. And I think I remember that's the episode that I almost made Stella murder me. So.
Huh.
Yeah.
Which is surprising.
I mean, I've already considered that this podcast has killed my future potential politics or career in politics.
Career?
Oh, yeah, all of ours.
This is going to affect my future politics.
Oh, Jesus.
It took you this long to ruin that.
Yeah, no running.
I would say IHOP about 3 years ago is probably...
no mayor for me.
I think you would have, but that's just me.
No. Hello, governor!
Rise up, light!
Rise up, light! All right, well, shit. I guess we're going to take our first break of the evening. I guess we're kind of dicking around waiting on this phone call. We're going to take a break. And
he's on the line. We never introduced him.
Yeah, he's just been waiting. but we'll be back in a second. All right.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome back.
We hope you enjoyed that little break of ours.
We did.
Yeah, we really did.
Anyway.
So, the topic at hand is the article, 5 Reasons Superhero Movies Are a Bubble That Will Soon Burst.
I think we've got
hello?
Our...
Hello?
Hey.
Is this Chris Fabian?
Yes, it is. You are now speaking to the entirety of the Coneheads theory.
How are you, good sir? Yeah, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just received the call from Mr. J.F. Sargent, the man of the hour. So we were just going through the points from 5 to 1 that you brought up in the article, the 5 reasons superhero movies, or I should say, the nerd culture is a bubble that will soon burst.
Oh, yeah.
So...
yeah, that was a really fun article to put together. I was really happy that they that Cracked let me run with that. It was kind of a crazy little pet theory I had, and they gave me the go-ahead, and I couldn't have been... I'm really thankful for them to let me write that.
How long have you been writing for them?
I started writing for them in 2011. Been out of college for a year, and I sent off a pitch, and they liked it, and I've just kind of climbed the ladder since then. I work in the... as a workshop moderator now with the other the new writers in the Cracked comedy workshop.
Nice. Very cool.
Yes, it's been a really good gig.
Nice, dude. Is there a big staff over there? Is it a big family or?
Yeah. There's the staff of editors that mainly live in the David Wong is the senior editor, lives in somewhere in the Midwest. I'm not sure exactly where. A lot of the staff live in California. The rest of us are scattered all over. We got researchers who live in Massachusetts. I'm here in Seattle. We're everywhere.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
So we mentioned at the beginning of the episode some of the other outlets you write for, Film School Rejects. And what are some of the other ones?
I write for Film School Rejects. That's a really fun blog. I'm really glad I get to work with them. There's also Dave Christopher Bell, who also writes for Cracked Freshman as well. I also do I work for the magazine Geek. Comes out every other month. I just do little joke lists that, you know, show up in the market and stuff in that magazine. And I write for the zine Fair, which is run by Extra, run by Fair.org, which is Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And that's less comedy, that's more like straight pop culture analysis and stuff.
Very cool. I guess to backtrack a little bit, we start every episode by going through the weekend estimates or actuals based on whatever we have available, and we already kind of touched on Star Trek Into Darkness, which I understand you were not a fan of.
I was not overly impressed with Star Trek Into Darkness.
Well, what were some of the problems you had with it?
I mean, I want to say straight off the bat, like, the things I liked about it, just like to get that out of the way, so it doesn't sound like I just hated the whole thing.
And don't worry about spoilers.
Don't worry about
spoilers. Don't worry about it, man. Let him ride.
Right. Well, I think J.J. Abrams really knows how to put together an action scene. As far as directing goes, I mean, he knows the nuts and bolts of directing, and I really appreciate seeing that. Like, especially after you watch a Michael Bay movie, a well-directed action scene is a breath of fresh air. Mm. I thought the acting was good. Some people don't like Chris Pine. I think he's a fine Kirk. Mm. So I think Zachary Quinto does a really good job as Spock. Mm. Uhura was really good. I love Carl Urban as Bones. I think he's
sure.
great.
Who doesn't?
But, you know, whenever I want to watch a sci-fi movie as a writer, I'm always paying a lot of attention to the writing. And
how do you feel about Simon Pegg?
You know, not impressed. You know, Damon Lindelof, I saw his name. I didn't know it was him going in, but I saw the credits as soon as Damon Lindelof's name came up in the writing. I was like, oh, well, there's the problem.
Ah.
He was one of the people who was really unhappy with Prometheus. So, the plot just kind of meandered. Things happened for, you know, really, really sketchy reasons. None of the logic really added up. It always just seemed like an excuse to get to the next flashy action scene. And as well directed as they were, if you don't have the proper architecture in there to make it work, then it's just kind of like it's boring or like a distraction at best. I thought the references to Wrath of Khan. I mean, if you're going to compare your movie to another spaceship movie, you don't want to do it to Wrath of Khan because you're not going to come out ahead because that's just a really great film. And Darkness, obviously, it has all like the Khan moment, and, you know, killing Kirk and the way that they killed him. It was just, I mean, it was really, really boring and lame. I mean, I laughed at the movie and I had a good time for a couple scenes. Like, you know, the guy who was killed in the beginning was me. So that was kind of fun.
I'm sorry, what was that? It broke up the guy who was killed in the beginning, what?
Who sacrifices himself. He played a character on Doctor Who named Mickey, I forget his last name, but he was first and second season of the reboot. He showed up a lot. And it was just kind of funny to see him in Star Trek. I thought that was...
Are you talking about Peter Weller's character?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
No. So, given your analysis of Star Trek, how do you feel about the future of the Star Wars franchise, having J.J. Abrams on board and Michael Arndt writing?
I'm conflicted. I do think J.J. Abrams, his Star Trek movies have been better Star Wars movies than we've seen in a long time. You know, they definitely are more like Star Wars movies than they are like Star Trek movies, and that Star Trek is very hard science fiction, speculative, talking about human nature and the future of us as a species, whereas Star Wars is a really cool adventure film. His movies are definitely adventure films. I think that way his Star Wars movies will be good. I think they'll be better than the prequels, but like I talked about in my article, we're kind of coming off a period in film history that's really, you know, sci-fi, action, superhero, fantasy geek centric. So coming out of, we're going to be, once the Star Wars movies are going to come out, we're going to be coming out of that. And also as a culture, we're so saturated with Star Wars stuff that getting more Star Wars movies, they're going to have to be really good to stand out.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think we're going to embrace them. That's my kind of cynical prediction. I think we're going to start getting sick of the superhero movies pretty soon. And then Star Wars is going to come out and just not do that well. I could be wrong. I would love to be wrong.
Right.
But, you know, looking at the way movies go, I think even if they're really good, they're going to be like a kind of a cult success. And then,
well, you know. I mean, I think also something that I think should be taken into consideration, though, is I think as long as there's, you know, I agree with you as far as genre goes, like it can get kind of hairy and saturated and, you know, you start having your kind of hangers on and these movies that come out that are, you know, knockoffs of other films and stuff like that, and it gets old. But I think as long as you have, at the heart of it, I think as long as you have really good directors who are willing to evolve and reinvent it, I'm actually kind of a fan. I was telling the guys earlier that I'm actually kind of a fan of the way that they, you know, that they reboot, you know, the way they've done with Spider-Man and with Batman, how, you know, they've actually, I guess, had the audacity to go ahead and try to reboot it. And
I do like the reboot concept. I thought Star Trek, you know, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek, I loved it. And I thought that was a really clever way to kind of do the reboot, where you get to be respectful about the origin story, but you have, you know, your time travel plot that, you know, just says, oh, we get to do things a little bit differently here, but with the same characters, and we're not going
right.
Totally off the rails, you know, ostensibly, even though some people think they went off the rails, I think it was all right. I love the first two of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies. I was not a huge fan of the new Spider-Man movie. I like Sam Raimi's a lot more. But, you know, that's not something I'm going to... I feel too strongly about. I mean, I love Spider-Man as a character, and I love Sam Raimi as a director, so it was like, you know, you're not going to ever make a superhero movie that I'm going to love more than Spider-Man 2, I don't think.
Spider-Man 2 was almost perfect.
I don't think we're ever going to stop seeing fantasy movies and you know, geek-centered films and stuff, but there's a huge amount of cultural and financial investment that needs to go into something like The Avengers, or a huge interconnected Star Wars film universe, and if they don't keep breaking records like they are now, investors are going to start saying, you know, the money men behind it, you know, behind the curtain who run everything are going to start seeing the money's going to start to dip on these nerd franchises, and they're just going to be like, well, I don't know if we can really justify another, you know, putting forth the money for Avengers. Like, if you look at The Hobbit, all the money they're putting into The Hobbit, like, New Line Cinemas, like I say in the article, is in a huge amount of debt. And Disney is also going to be, you know, even though they're Disney and they're huge and, you know, ostensibly indestructible at this point, that's how it seems, but they are going to be, the reason they're indestructible is because they don't, you know, they know not to take risks when things get too risky, and Star Wars and superhero movies are going to seem more and more risky as time goes on.
Sure.
Do you think, though, that with an organization like Disney, they have such a share of a market, a television market, a theme park market, they can keep something culturally relevant and keep people coming to see these movies? Do you think that might be a possibility? It's something that we haven't seen before?
Well, you know, maybe, but I can't think of a time that's happened before. Like, even the Disney princess thing, which is something that you'd think would last forever, has started to go away. You know, the Disney princesses aren't even, they don't even really do princesses anymore. Princess and the Frog, yeah.
They didn't really
know what to do with Brave either. And, you know, that's something that kind of seems like Disney put a lot of, you know, collateral and advertising into, and, you know, people have kind of veered away from it culturally.
I mean, there's, I'm a huge Disney nerd guy. So, I mean, there's continual creation of Disney-like princess material. They just opened attractions in Florida and in California that were both Disney princess-centric. So, I mean, and the reception of Rapunzel was pretty darn good. They've sold a lot of merchandise in that and created a lot of content with her. So, I mean, I'm not sure.
We're getting into an area that I don't actually know a lot about. You know, when I look at the movies, I think Tangled and Princess and the Frog and Brave just were kind of their big flops recently, or, you know, as close to Disney comes to having a flop. It looks like a flop to them. So, you know, they are. That's why they bought Star Wars and are so invested in Marvel, is so they can pick up boy franchises, because they don't really have as strong a grip on the Disney princess thing as they have to have before. So, right. As far as how, you know, Disney as a marketing entity can just keep interest in, you know, they definitely have the experience. Someone who can do that. I'm just thinking that, you know, superhero movies are so big right now, there's going to be the fall off.
But I mean, Star Wars, too, undeniably kind of has its own, you know, built-in empire, you know. So, I mean, I don't think Star Wars is as affected by, you know, by the, you know, the trends and, I wouldn't say unaffected, but I mean, it's, I think Star Wars has its, as long as it's handled by somebody like Abrams, who clearly has an eye for not only good story, but a good eye for that classic sort of 70s kind of, you know, dare I say the lens flare thing. I think that's been a huge point of contention.
Yeah, I like lens flare. Everyone
I do too.
Me too.
I know. It's kind of neat. I don't know why I'm supposed to hate it.
Right. No, it looks great. And it has that vintage, like, kind of golden age of, Close Encounters with the Third Kind and, like, you know, that Spielberg-y.
Exactly.
That's why Super 8 was so apropos to me, is because it felt like a Spielberg film, you know.
Yeah. One thing that's different about Star Wars, too, if I could limit it to superhero comics for a second, with Star Wars, you have that entire universe, which is just owned by Lucasfilm. And, you know, they had a lot. They could really control the brand and control all Star Wars-related merchandise and film, and everything was kind of like in their little wheelhouse. Whereas when you get to superheroes, Marvel, you know, they sold Spider-Man to Sony, X-Men to Fox, Blade to Warner Brothers, and Lionsgate has I think Lionsgate has Punisher. So you have a whole bunch of different studios. They're all making superhero movies. They're all going to be trying to compete for your attention. And in some cases, these superheroes kind of occupy the same world, sort of like, ostensibly, like Spider-Man is really in the same universe as the Avengers, but he's not going to cross over in the movies because of movie rights. And then Warner Brothers, meanwhile, is going to be trying to get the DC universe off the ground. So what I'm seeing, what I'm worried about or thinking is going to happen is that just with superhero movies, we're going to be getting inundated from so many different directions with it that we're going to lose, like in the broad sense, lose interest in the whole myth. Obviously, I'm not going to, you're not going to, a bunch of, I think everyone listening to us isn't going to. But when you look at like the overall 18 to 25 demographic that they're trying to sell the movie to, we're going to move on to whatever the next big thing is.
Mm. So from where I'm sitting, it seems like the real test of how much longer we have with, I guess, superhero movies specifically, would you agree, is probably going to be Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, I think Guardian might be the tipping point because it's just so, it's so comic booky, you know?
Yeah.
you get the raccoon with a gun. You got, you know, an intergalactic, you know, group of pirates cruising around. It's just, it's really speculative sci-fi. It's really influenced by fantasy. It's really influenced by, wouldn't it be cool if, so once you get to Garden, I think, you know, Superman we can get behind, like, oh, it's a guy with superpowers, it's swings around New York, and Iron Man, oh, it's a guy who built suits. And then, you know, Thor, like, oh, he comes from another planet, but he still shows up at Earth eventually, and he spends most of the movie on Earth, and then, you know, the Avengers, it was all these characters we knew working together. And then we get to Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's like they're in another part of the universe. You know, the one guy, I can't remember if the guy is human or not right now. Or if he just looks like a human.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's like most of the cast aren't people. It's mostly CGI. You're getting really weird. We have James Gunn directing, who's a good director.
Yeah.
I like Blither a lot. But
You know where he got his start? You know where James...
How did he get his start?
Troma. He wrote the script for a Tromeo and Juliet.
Oh, kick ass.
That
makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, totally. And then he split to do the Scooby-Doo movie.
The Scooby-Doo movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him in the Scooby-Doo movies.
Yeah.
I never played his video game. I wanted to get around to it.
Lollipop Chainsaw?
Yeah, was it good?
A friend of mine had it, and it was, I mean, it was clearly a James Gunn creation. I think that kind of outweighed the gameplay because that was a little generic, but it was definitely fun to watch, I'll say that.
Was that like an Adult Swim game or something?
Uh-uh. It was just this chick in a short skirt with a chainsaw fighting. Yeah, yeah, a cheerleader fighting zombies and, yeah.
Can't lose.
So, with science fiction specifically, I know we've talked about Star Trek and Star Wars. What about some of these other more, I don't want to say independent, but these franchises that are new and not connected to any pre-existing franchise, namely Elysium. How do you think that's going to play out?
No, actually, and that's something I've been thinking about a lot, because we have a bunch this year of science fiction movies that are new ideas. We have, and, you know, some of them are stupid, but, you know, Oblivion, that's a new franchise. We have After Earth, Elysium, what are the other ones? There's a couple more. But those are three. Oh, Pacific Rim, obviously.
Yeah. Gravity.
So those are four. Yeah. Gravity, yeah. Gravity's more, because that's that guy, and that's not really, Gravity's, I don't think, is going to be a huge, big, I'm really excited for it, but I don't think it's going to be a blockbuster on the same level that, like.
Right. Pacific Rim.
It's not as inherently expensive a movie. Mm. But just looking at those, you know, those are, like, big-budget movies getting really big marketing campaigns that are totally new ideas, and audiences are kind of eating it up. Like, Oblivion did really well, even though Tom Cruise is in it, and everybody hates Tom Cruise right now.
It's weird, because I'm the other way around. Like, I like Tom Cruise, but I just didn't like Oblivion that much. Like,
I didn't see Oblivion. I heard they had the same twist at the end as Moon.
I still have yet to see Boo.
Oblivion was, I mean, I liked Joe Kaczynski. He definitely evolved as a filmmaker from Tron Legacy. So visually it was gorgeous, but the story was just sort of, I mean, we've seen it before just over and over again. Just, this was a slightly different version.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to see it. I'm waiting for it on Blu-ray or on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, Man, but you know what I loved that came out last year that didn't get any? I believe they made a shitload of money. One movie I loved didn't make any money last year was Dread. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
Oh, my.
We're big, big Dread fans at this table. Yeah.
That movie kicked ass. That was one of my three favorite movies of 2012. That was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
What were your other two?
Well, The Avengers, and, you know, it's got to be The Hobbit.
Nice.
Even though it wasn't very good, just because I'm such a huge Tolkien fan, and I've read The Silmarillion so many times, and I've read The Hobbit so many times, I just was like, ah!
How much of that first flick would you say is, like, from The Silmarillion?
How much of the book The Hobbit is in the film?
No, The Silmarillion.
How much of The Silmarillion is in the film?
Oh, none of The Silmarillion's in the film. It's mainly the appendices from Return of the King. Mulan doesn't actually own the licenses for The Silmarillion. The Silmarillion is still owned by the Tolkien estate, and this Tolkien estate hates what Mulan has done with Tolkien stuff, so there's, like, some tension
there.
No, if The Silmarillion was in there, we would have had a lot more werewolves.
Yeah.
The Silmarillion's just lousy with werewolves. It's badass.
Cool.
Teen Wolf,
yeah.
Well, going back to The Avengers for a second, do you think, and not so much from like a keeping audiences happy, but do you think that, like from your kind of theory, do you think that that Avengers will actually get to its third phase? Like, do you think they'll be able to pull it out financially?
I want it to so bad. I really want to see the Infinity Gauntlet movie, which is what I think the third Avengers movie will be.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I'm really worried Avengers 2 just isn't going to do that well, and then it's going to die off.
You don't think it'll do well because of the superhero? You think by that point, you know, people will have had enough?
Yeah, I think we'll just burn out on them. I won't. I think most people will. And it's just the numbers aren't going to stay as high.
What do you think about Iron Man 3?
I loved Iron Man 3. I thought the action ending was tacked on at the end. I would have preferred to see a kind of more a climax that, you know, Tony in his suit falling apart fighting Guy Pierce. I think that would have been a cooler ending. But overall, I thought they really pulled that off. It's the best superhero 3 movie I can think of.
Yeah, that's a pretty safe statement.
How'd you feel about Dark Knight Rises?
I didn't like it.
Really? Was it a plot hole kind of thing, or?
I kept losing interest as I was watching the movie. I kept getting bored. It didn't. Yeah, the plot just kind of meandered around the. You know, when they punched him in the spine to fix his back, like that was irritating.
You fight like a younger man, Mr. Sergeant.
The first half of the movie is exactly the same as the second half of the movie. Like, you start out, Batman's hurt, and he has to train, and then he fights Bane, and then he gets hurt, and then he has to train, and then he comes back and fights Bane again.
And gets stabbed.
Like, the second time he's fighting Bane in the snow, I was just thinking, like, didn't we already have this scene, except he was underground?
I came here to stop you.
That line.
Good line, yeah.
I came back.
You could have just not said anything. It would have been all the clear.
Have you seen the Oral Knots online? The Oral Knots, redubbed, I think it's called, where they put new dialogue over Bane's voice, so he spends the whole movie talking about eating properly.
No, that sounds golden.
He's like, strawberries are packed with fiber. Like,
that's awesome.
Was that from the same people? Was that from the same people that redubbed the trailer with Pee Wee Herman's voice?
Oh no, I haven't seen that.
Fucking gold.
See, I think if anybody is going to oversaturate the superhero thing, I think it's probably going to be DC kind of scrambling to try to catch up with what Marvel has accomplished through years of putting out singular superhero films and then, you know, having that time to kind of lead them all up to the Avengers, which was a fucking smash, you know, which was a breakout, you know, record setter, you know. Whereas DC hasn't really. I mean, they tried with Superman. They did Batman. Seems like they're going to try to come right out of the gate. I heard speakings that they were considering coming right out of the gate with a Justice League film, yeah, and relaunching Batman
with the Justice League,
yeah.
Yeah, I can see them doing that. It just seems like Warner Brothers, because it's easier for DC because all their property is owned by Warner Brothers. Marvel's scattered all around in the four winds, but DC's only one spot. But they just can't make any non-Batman movie work. You know, like you said, Superman sucked, Green Lantern sucked, Wonder Woman TV show is like kind of flailing around like a dead fish.
And, like a dead corpse.
It's like, you know, they just seem to suck at it. Like, if like Man of Steel can find a tone or look or something unique.
Right.
But, you know, Superman just, he's inherently, he's kind of like a less interesting character than most other superheroes. Just
for sure.
I know some people are going to hate me for this opinion, but he is just an alien god. You know, he just comes and I can punch anything and oh no, someone is bigger and stronger than me. It's just like punching. He's gotten super, super strong over and over and over again. Whereas, you know, with Iron Man, obviously there's the gadgets, and with Thor, there's the, you know, the inter reality politics and all that stuff.
Right.
But and like Superman, Man of Steel is really going to have to do something unique, and I just don't know if I can think Zack Snyder can really go that
profound.
That unique. His movies are kind of derivative and.
For needing to be like unique and innovative, they've picked a storyline that has already been done before, which I think is not going to help out too much with the innovation.
Yeah,
I think it might rely heavily on the actors themselves. I think that because if I'm not mistaken, Michael Shannon is going to be playing Zod, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
he is. Yeah,
and I mean,
he's great.
Oh, yeah, he's like one of my darlings as far as like actors who are really doing it right now. I think he's. He's great, and I think he's going to... What I've seen of him as Zod has been amazing, and I think that... I think that that film is definitely going to... A huge factor of what's going to make it great is the performances. Kevin Costner, yeah. Russell Crowe.
Who's playing Lois Lane in this one?
Amy Adams, okay. Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, she's great. Yeah. I mean, she's a great actress.
I think the biggest thing that Man of Steel's got going for it, honestly, apart from... You know, the names is just the nostalgia factor as far as seeing it, you know, doing well.
Yeah.
I think if there's one thing that's going to help it, it's going to be the fact that, A, people that pay attention to comic book films are really just rooting for a Superman film to do it right since we've been waiting
right.
so long to see
right.
it. And just the fact that, I mean, you know, anytime you see Superman on screen, regardless of how good or bad the acting is, you get a little tingle. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Know. I mean, hell, even Star Wars, dude. I mean, the acting wasn't exactly... phenomenal, you know what I mean?
In the originals.
Yeah, I mean, even, yeah, in the old school Star Wars, I mean, it's funny, it's adequate, and it's beautiful, and it's exactly what it needs to be, but it's not, you know.
So, as far as the studio interference, that was one point that I don't quite see a whole lot of that going on. It seems like a lot of the creatives are kind of, you know, they have the reins, and actors, producers, directors have a little more clout than, you know, they typically do in this situation.
You break up. You think the actor, the directors and stuff have a little bit more clout. They're not. You're saying that they're. I don't have my article in front of me. You're saying that the studio isn't.
Well, I just personally, and this could just be I haven't read the right things, but I don't. I can't think of any particular examples with, like, the fantasy and sci-fi and superhero movies where the studios are, you know, trying to crush down and take control, other than the salary disputes going on right now with Marvel and some of its Avengers stars.
Right. Well, I mean, to sort of clear it up, you're aware of like the gold, the, you know, what's been dubbed like kind of the golden era of Hollywood and the golden era of director driven films in Hollywood in the 70s with, you know, Scorsese and Spielberg and Coppola, and, you know, when they were making all these great films in the 70s where they were by and large going for the most part, unhindered by the studio. They were given complete trust and make, you know, churning out these epic movies, you know, The Godfather, Jaws, like, you know, all these films. And eventually, Michael Cimino's Heaven's Gate, along with William Friedkin's Sorcerer and, was it Coppola's...
One from the Heart? Was that it?
One from the Heart.
Yeah, yeah. And those just, in a quick succession, basically just ruined their respective studios. In fact, I think Heaven's Gate, like, folded United Artists for a while. They had to...
It destroyed the entire studio. And I think that's... And, like, the message I got from that is that it really only takes... a couple really big, high-profile flops to make the people really rethink what's going on.
Yeah,
and I think it's definitely going to be different in this case because obviously Marvel Studios controls Marvel, so that's like a business that has controlled these properties for a long time that will be maintaining control. But there is the element they start to look at it as like. They start to see it as like a system, you know, like, oh, the superhero movies have to be limited to this and they have to be, this kind of thing, which is why I think what I pointed out, like with Watchmen, the movie is very much like very similar to the kinds of superhero movies we've already been seeing, whereas Watchmen, the comic book, is obviously a really kind of sober and slow-paced exploration of what it would really mean to be the kind of people that superheroes are in the real world.
Have you watched the director's cut?
It's more like the Kick-Ass movie than it is like, the Watchmen movie.
Right.
have you had a chance to see the director's cut of The Watchmen?
I haven't yet. It's a lot better.
It's surprisingly, yeah. In this case, it actually... Because I'm with you. Like, I was literally finishing up the Watchmen graphic novel in the theater, waiting for the new one. And, I left sort of I liked it, but overall I dug it, but I was like, oh man, you know, there was definitely some stuff that was kind of left out and da 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 da. And, I ended up seeing the director's cut on Blu-ray and yeah, they had so much more from the graphic novel. It was actually very, and if I'm not mistaken, they did the whole, you know, the, what was it? The curse,
Tales of the Black Trader.
Tales of the Black Freighter. Yeah, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, they put out like a separate release for that, and like kind of incorporated that too. So, I definitely think Snyder was thorough, you know, with Watchmen, and that's another one that was a really, I mean, he's borderline not dead in the water, but that's another one where it's like there's people that are so like fervently, you know, it has such a, you know, a cult following or whatever that.
Mm-hmm. You know. Now, do you think that? Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Do you think the massive failure of John Carter is playing into any of what's going on as far as, you know, the studio's taking back control or anything, or?
I saw John Carter. It's so hard to gauge that in there. I think it is kind of like a prelude to, I think it's making them a little bit more nervous or skittish about these really big, high concept ideas. But I don't think clearly it hasn't totally killed Disney's interest in this stuff. The John Carter guy, the guy who was responsible, got like lost his job over that.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
I think that was the Richard Ross. He was the head of the studio. Yeah, and I know that some of the marketing people were canned over that as well. But Andrew Stanton, the director, if I'm not mistaken, pretty much went unscathed. And I guess as a punishment is going to have to direct Finding Nemo 2. I don't know, but... because that was Andrew Stanton's pet project. He had been trying to get that made forever, and
that should have been a really good movie. It's too bad that what we got was what we got because that's such a cool old franchise.
Now you did mention that the studios are getting a little more skittish, but doesn't that fit right in with the points that you were making about how the bubble's going to burst, where you know they start taking away all the risks and the innovations that make a lot of these breakout hits so successful in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. You know, after John Carter didn't do so well, they're going to be like, oh, well, you know, we can't deviate too much from the formula. But at the same time, you know, what is they're just going to implement the same formula, but in with these different franchises like Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy, which are inherently a bit more silly. So people are going to be going there and, you know, A, being kind of sick of the same old superhero arc, you know, looking for something new, but also getting that same arc juxtaposed on something that's even more alien and harder to relate to than Spider-Man, Iron Man, and those things that are just like a little bit too divorced from reality. And, you know, people are going to start craving something a bit more grounded and less flashy.
Do you think that this, the problem with John Carter was the same problem that they had with Dread, in that it was a marketing issue, or it was, you know, the movie itself?
I didn't think the movie was very good. I don't know. I think a lot of things would have had to have been different for John Carter to work. With Dread, it was definitely marketing. They didn't know. They didn't market it.
At all.
At all.
I almost said they didn't know what movie they were selling, yeah, and I remembered that, no, they actually just didn't sell the movie.
I mean, that was my darling of last year. It was quite possibly my number one, and I would in all honesty say that that was my favorite superhero movie of last year, over Dark Knight and The Avengers.
I definitely liked it a lot better than Avengers. I like it better than most movies I've seen. That was a great film. I really wish it had made more money. I really wish that we were getting a sequel.
Well, have you heard, I think during press for Into Darkness, Carl Urban was talking about having a conversation with the director or the producer and said
I heard, I don't want to get my hopes up.
Right. I mean...
Take that kind of heartbreak.
Yeah. So... When I first read your article, because I read it the day it came out, and we've actually been meaning to talk about this article for a while, but scheduling conflicts have prevented everyone from being here, so we've kind of put it on hold. And I'm glad we did, because, you know, we got the man himself on the show. But when I first read it, I was kind of like, nope, this ain't right. We're going strong, things are going good. And then I read the stuff about Marvel and, you know, the disputes they were having with, I think specifically Scarlett Johansson and Chris Hemsworth over salary.
Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr.'s stuff, yeah, about salary. It's just like, I can't believe he thought that stuff gets brought up in the press. Like, I only made $170 billion.
Right.
I don't want to hear about that, man.
Yeah.
A tiny little apartment. Struggling to pay for my cat's food. Like, I don't want to hear about how much money you're getting to play
right
on your Iron Man toy costume.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're getting to about the point of wrapping it up. Do you have anything, any closing words you'd like to say?
Not that really. I was gonna say something for development, because that's what I'm watching right now, but I don't want to spoil it for everybody who hasn't gotten to see the fourth season yet. Thanks for having me on, man. This was a blast.
Dude, yeah, well,
absolutely.
Thank you for coming on. This is our first telephone interview, and we definitely welcome you to come back anytime you'd like. So,
sounds great. Let's keep in touch. You have my Facebook.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sergeant.
Thank you, Mr. Sergeant.
All right. Take care, guys.
Yeah, man.
Take care.
Have a great night.
Bye.
Cool.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our fantastic little interview with Mr. J.F. Sargent, once again a ubiquitous internet columnist for Geek Magazine, Film School Rejects, and the publication that brought him to us, Cracked.com. If you've never been to Cracked, you're missing out. It's a comedy website. They got really funny videos. And even when their articles aren't funny, they're definitely always very, very interesting.
And if you're interested in reading the article for yourself, which I'm sure you are after that wonderful interview, I believe the title of the article is Five Reasons the Superhero Bubble is About to Burst.
Will soon burst.
And that was published earlier this month.
That was actually published on April 29th.
earlier last month.
Right. And in the interim, he's had two more articles published on Cracked, Five Horrifying Implications of the Star Trek Universe, and one very, very cool one. I don't remember the exact title, but it's something to the effect of five spoilers or hints hidden in movies. And it basically goes through foreshadowing things that show up in movies that are, you know,
telltale
of things to come, but you may not necessarily know it as such when you see it. And it's a very fascinating article.
Yeah. Hilariously talented and very, very... he's definitely an up-and-comer at the Crack staff. I know he's been there, what do you say, a year and a half. But
He's been there since 2011.
But yeah, his name is J.F. Sargent.
Yeah, dude.
It's S-A-R-G-E-N-T if you search for his name. His articles will come up, and I strongly suggest you go and do so.
Like him on Facebook, follow him on Twitter, and you can go to his Tumblr page where he has a blog of his very own.
Yeah, we don't even plug our own email and Twitter accounts anymore, but this guy I'm willing to plug.
Yeah,
we do.
We plug our email.
Yeah,
I have not
plugged our email since the beginning of season two.
Chris has.
Yes,
we got you covered.
Right,
we got
good,
you covered.
Good. Good. My job is.
This has been like one of my favorite episodes, though, man. Like, I definitely like would love to like have more guests call in, man.
Yeah.
As much as possible. That was great.
That's we've broken new ground, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
Good convo.
And we appreciate you being along for the ride. So
woo-hoo.
I think with that, we're going to wrap things up.
Hell yeah.
I am Chris Fabian.
I'm Harrison Williams.
I'm Wade Meinbrink.
I am Chris Thomas.
And I'm your moderator, Andrew Wallow. You can send us your emails.
You're cutting out a frequent contributor here.
I'm going to mention the frequent contributor at Studio Girl. There's a method to this.
Okay.
See this? This right up here. This is what's going on.
You got a face for radio.
It's a churning.
You got a face for radio, you fucker. No, you can email us at coneheadstheory@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @theconeheadstheory. Is it the? Is there a the in front of that?
I believe so.
I'm not a twit. I don't. Anyway. And joining us here in the studio today was frequent contributor, Mr.
Nicholas Fabian.
And our studio girl, who doesn't look like she wants to say anything, April Rich, ladies and gentlemen. So with that, thank you so much for listening. And we will be here next week again.
Hopefully,
assuming that nothing goes to plan. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Coneheads Theory.
Absolutely.
I assess the social order in decline. Our people's been assassinated by our own blind. Balance bullets or blast vertebrae. The yacht shots and lyrics of well aimed will. The verbal rape is no escape. Your voice, Jesus, promised lies. I'm exterminated by sincere tears. Often the honest only word to avoid wooden coffins. Stop talking cause of speech that allows for deceit. This dialect I speak is forever bred and baseless. Complacent eyes are the only witness to my changes. Abrasive words slurred with the two spark. Caught by the few who do watch. But more stories blocked. Rest of your wrath will not sit on Sabbath. It always had destruction to grab. Rest of your wrath will not sit on Sabbath. And not, but we still in the shadows. Once this man's collapse, clasp hands in vain attempt to pray your four victims. Ask for resistance to sever, test for my design. No remnants of nightmares, broken sections. Blessings can't save designated slaves. Only answer that remains to subvert whole system. All systems fail, but it's bitches that has failed. That's why patriarchy's jail to provide failed income. None listen, I speak with this larynx. Addicts leave a slow increments with the granite. Hands bound and damaged, no weapons. We brandish, we savage by masses, but this anger's just average. Rest of your wrath will not sit on Sabbath. It always had destruction, so grab me back. For your wrath will not sit on Sabbath. And not, but we still in the shadows. That pathetic premise of freedom. of your young mind. His flesh and mind bleeds words on papyrus. Desires blurred with the torture minds of the bias. None stand as righteous when judged through desirous. Skidding off my man's iron. Weighed his soul's weight when well tired. The unsuspected conspire. Burst with papyrus, fills night sky. Should we attempt to walk the water since we all crucify? These questions denied. The answers just lies. Sanctify history from hands of blind scribes. Breath for no wrath will rise to foreshadow. You spin always mad, destruction's unraveled. Breath for no wrath will rise to foreshadow. Heads not, but we still in the shackles. Breath for no wrath will rise to foreshadow. You spin always mad, destruction's unraveled. Breath for no wrath will rise to foreshadow. Heads not, but we still in the shackles. Breath for no wrath.